So this morning I spoke in general about faith and that it begins with this willingness to nurture those qualities within us that we know for ourselves, or even if we know it from outer experiences, from people outside of us, that these qualities within us, that we can nurture within us, will lead to happiness and peace for ourselves and others. And when we can understand so deeply that certain qualities or habit patterns within us actually lead to suffering for ourselves and others, we can refrain from acting out those qualities. We can avoid just feeding them. So those are the parts about faith that basically we need to know. Where do we begin? It's that willingness to nurture what leads to benefit for ourselves and others, and to refrain from those qualities that lead to suffering. And so this, when we explore this in ourselves, and actually we look around us and we see how are other people doing it, that we can take in for ourselves and maybe explore, because it benefits another person, maybe I can try that too, but we're exploring it for ourselves. It's not that we're just accepting blindly what's going on. It says in the Dharma that there are three different kinds of faith, and I want to just explore that a little bit with you this morning so that we can see where we land sometimes, maybe just out of habit or maybe just out of a lack of inner exploration, because we just haven't gone there for some reason, but maybe we're ready to a little bit now. So these are the three basic different kinds of faith, and some of them have a little more precision to them. Blind faith is where a lot of us start out, because we were just born into a family that understood faith in a certain way. And probably for all of us, we learned it in a way that was basically good, of course. Basically good. And maybe completely good. But we're investigating for ourselves. This is what this practice of awareness is all about, to investigate for ourselves. Blind faith is when we're not yet completely trusting our own experience, because we don't really know it completely yet. That's why we start out on this path of awareness, a lot of self-awareness, a lot of awareness of how people's actions affect us, how our actions affect others. This is the path of awareness. Blind faith is when we don't yet trust that experience of our own awareness, because we don't really know it so deeply or as completely as maybe we can. We haven't explored the inner terrain enough, or maybe we haven't explored it at all. I know there are certain parts of myself, when I go there, I realize, wow, this is a new part of me I've never seen before. I want to touch that part of me with the trusting part of my awareness, that when I go there, I can really just open to it. So even for someone like many of us in this room who have spent many hours on the cushion, many ways of trying to explore what's going on inwardly, there comes a time for all of us, sometimes it's earlier in life, sometimes it's later in life, when we see a place that, wow, I've not seen this before. And it could be really, really hard to open to that place that we haven't seen before. Maybe it's because, not because we've avoided it so much, but because we've been busy doing other good things. Not because we're bad people, but we've been doing other good things in our life. And when we touch that place that opens to us, we know this is where I haven't been so faithful about going to, and maybe now we want to do it. So we tend to, when we have this kind of blind faith, we tend to misplace our trust in others. We tend to have, we see others as, wow, that person is really great. We have just enough faith to follow instructions from others, but we don't have enough faith in ourselves sometimes to follow the instructions. You know, I don't know about you, but there's been a lot of times in earlier parts of my practice when there was so much pain going on in the body and then the mind in relationship to the body that it was too much to bear. So even when my teacher said, just touch it with your awareness, it was like, no, I can't. You know, I had to do all kinds of things to help me get there. Loving kindness, compassion, equanimity, ways of hearing how others did it. So we might have just enough faith to take in the instructions, but we can't even follow them. Sometimes, blind faith has a kind of energy that can follow instructions mechanically, but it's not really, it's pretty dull. It goes to the experience of it, but doesn't, like Ezu Pandita says, penetrate, kind of sink into the experience. Now, many of you in this room have practiced quite a long time, and you know the difference. Touching it, having the willingness to touch it is the first step, the willingness to touch it. Then to actually touch it is another thing. But when you can touch it and kind of sink into it, that's even more intimate. And when you can touch it, sink into it, and then relax into it, that's really deep acceptance of what's going on, really knowing deeply how that feels to be sad or to be angry or to be resistant or to be cruel or to be in delusion. How do those actually feel deeply? And we don't have to get psychological about it. We just have to be human about it. Just feel it. So when we have this kind of blind faith, we take the instructions like very mechanically. And so that's not wrong. That's not, don't make ourselves bad for doing that. Just know where you are. When we take, when we were doing this practice blindly with kind of blind faith, I'm just speaking for myself. It's as though I'm expecting another person to do it for me. The teacher, you know, the teacher is so great that, oh, I've had great teachers like you have. And it's like, I just expected that person to do the whole thing for me. I would look at Manindra, my first teacher, and see just what a beautiful person I thought he was. And that if I could, I would just sit there with him and expect him, he's doing it, you know. He's sitting there and I can just sit in his light. I can just receive his grace. And by his grace, it's all going to happen. You know, it takes a little bit of that kind of believing in the grace of everything. But when we're depending on it too much, it's kind of expecting others to do it for us. So as a result, we don't actually recognize what's going on within oneself moment to moment. We're content to hear from others, about others, how to live a spiritual life, and then we live that vicariously. We live our spiritual life vicariously through others. So just explore. Do we do that sometimes? Do we just, you know, say, we hear somebody, I've done it a lot, so we hear somebody and it's beautiful and it makes sense and we're kind of in love with their mind, that we're not looking at our own mind. And we say, that's right, I believe you. But we don't know it for ourselves. Believing another person is not really knowing it for ourselves. When we say, it's true. Are we saying it's true for us? Or are we just saying, yeah, that's true for you. It's wonderful. You're so wonderful. But we still don't have that trust in ourselves to be really faithful to knowing that we can be aware ourselves. So we're content to hear it from others. We're content to see the light in others and sing their praises. But doing the work ourselves, it's hard. It's hard. Our own teachers, I know many of us have practiced with great teachers in the West or from Asia. And I would hear from Manindra when he would think that I was depending on him too much, he would say, the teachers only point the way. You yourself have to do it. You yourself have to walk the way. Or would he would say to me, the Buddha solved his problem. Now you have to solve yours. You know, and he wouldn't say, by the way, I solved my problem completely, because he would always say, my path isn't yet finished. Be very truthful that he isn't totally free. But he would say, the Buddha solved his problem. You have to solve your problem yourself. And Upandita, my other teacher, when I would come into the room and there were those, you know, those cords that you put out to your teacher, like, I want some of that juice, you know. And he would just put up the fan. And I, you know, I would say, I can't depend on him. He's just saying the instructions. This is how to do it. I have to do it myself, because once he thought I was depending on him, the minute he thought I would be depending on him, no. He doesn't give you much. And he would give you just enough to go on. So we have to understand for ourselves, to know what kind of energy it takes for ourselves to really have the willingness to go there, have the ability to touch the experience, have the ability to sink in, not to really investigate that experience moment to moment, and then to relax into it so we can really know that experience, to know the deep impersonal nature of it, to know the impermanent nature of it, to know that if the experience is beautiful, it's not going to give us lasting happiness. Yeah, momentary, but not lasting. And the other part of that, is if it's painful, that this was the best part of it all, that it wouldn't last if it's painful. So what a relief. When we know that, when we know all that, that's wisdom. And we internalize that wisdom for ourselves as human beings. It isn't dependent on someone else's wisdom. It isn't dependent on someone else's experience. But when we're in blind faith, that's when we get dependent. So then it turns into bright faith. When we keep doing that, when we don't tend to misplace our trust in others, which is blind faith, and we bring our trust to our own ability to be aware, it becomes bright faith. Bright faith is when you actually recognize the beauty, the brightness of another, but it's not like you have to let all that brightness, live that brightness and pretend that it's you. You get inspired by this brightness to do it for yourself. Something begins to light a flame of possibility for us in that bright faith. Our own confidence in our own inner light begins to shine. It's not just theirs. You recognize the possibility and you connect that possibility with your own human life. That is bright faith. You still might have a degree of like dependence on it somehow to keep that remembering going for you so you know you can do it yourself. When being around Manindraji, he always told me stories about Deepama, who was his relative and also one of his students. Have you read the book about Deepama by Amy or Amita Schmidt? And beautiful, about the life of this householder, just like myself and most of us, that was in so much suffering, I'll tell you more about her later, that she was really willing to touch everything in her to understand all the places in her that didn't understand deeply enough to get her to a place of freedom. She had gone through so much in her life. And so she actually, according to Manindraji, she actually surpassed Manindraji in her spiritual attainments or spiritual purification, another way of putting it. And Manindraji always told me this story about Deepama, so I would be inspired by that. And I always was inspired by Deepama, how one time, and when she was in Burma, this is what I picture. One time she was in Burma and she went there to learn from Manindraji. And one time she was in so much pain in her body and so much like she couldn't even stand up, that she was always inspired by the Buddha. She was born as a Buddhist. Actually, the Barua family, where Manindra comes from, and Deepama was also a Barua, that line, that lineage went straight up. They were Buddhists from the time of the Buddha. And so they lived in communities that were Hindu and Muslim, but they were a small community of Buddhists that went from the lineage to the time of the Buddha. So she really believed her. The beauty of for her to see the Buddha in front of her was so great that that inspired her. So one time she crawled from her kuti, from her hut, at this Mahasi center, retreat center, to the and crawled up the stairs to the Dhamma hall to sit in front of the Buddha, because that's what inspired her. So then, her being inspired by what she could do, then I would know, I could do that too. I can do that too. I'm a simple householder, raising children and doing what I do in life. It's not that big of a deal. I don't have a lot of letters after my name. I have Rona, Ramon, Tracy, and Therese. Those are the 4 degrees that I have. And boy, I was, bounced against the walls by those 4 degrees and more, actually. So I'm just like her, and I can do it too. So that's what we have when we have bright faith. We know that we can do it too. We get really interested in what we're able to do for ourselves, not just might be ignited by others, but the ignition is in our own hearts. The light, the flame isn't out there. It's in ourselves, and we begin to ignite it more and more. So this is when our spiritual compass comes into view. When it starts to point the way to freedom for ourselves in this bright faith. Not for somebody else that, they did it, good for them, I'm just going to bask in their light, but for ourselves. And we know, because we begin to explore in our own hearts what leads to freedom, what leads to suffering from freedom, one thing, and the other part is what are the habit patterns that are keeping us in this prison of suffering. So when we know both, not just what leads to the end, but what is keeping us imprisoned in the place of not freedom, we need to know both sides. And then we have our spiritual compass. This is the direction I want to go in. And this is where I'm at now. We need to know both. Because if we don't know where we're coming from, if you've got a map, you have to know where you're at before you know where you might want to go, but you have to know where you're at to know the route from one place to another. So both are really important. You can't just know, I want to go to the light or whatever. They say that sounds so good. So we begin to open to that confidence and deepen into that for ourselves. And then we come to verified faith, that kind of unshakable faith. And that unshakable faith is when experiential understanding deepens. When we, because of bright faith, we're inspired by others. And sometimes Manindra would say, if you don't have faith in yourself, then borrow mine for a moment. You know, I always remember that about Manindra. He would say, borrow mine. And so I would also borrow my other teachers. You know, sometimes when I'm in a lot of difficulty in myself, I just feel my teacher's wings over me, you know, and I'm just, or I remember them as I'm sitting with them, and I just remember their gaze upon me, or their, you can do it, you know, for myself. And it helps me to get through. So we can borrow, but we also know we have this unshakable faith where the experience of understanding that the awareness can be so clear and so caring at the same time, so soberingly clear that we can face what's difficult, and so caring that we can bring a kind of gentleness to what's difficult, that our faith in ourselves deepens. It can really be strong. It can start to be more unshakable. And so it gives rise to this unshakable doubt about ourselves, about our experience with the world. Nothing can take one out of that experience because it doesn't belong to anyone. It belongs to our own hearts and our own minds. So eventually, with that verified faith of knowing ourselves, it actually turns into, I mentioned a little bit, unshakable faith. So no matter what happens outside, it doesn't matter what happens outside, inside we know we can get through this. It may be hard. We may have to acknowledge all the pain we're going through and not be in denial of it. But we know that we can be there with it. And that's what's really important in those moments. So there's bright faith. There's blind faith. There's bright faith. There's verified faith. And then there's unshakable faith that comes from this verified faith. So those are the different kinds of faith that we can begin to see in ourselves. And we may have a different kind of faith depending on what we're experiencing. Maybe a lot of us are really, we can easily come to a place in ourselves that can feel emotions and that can feel our tenderness. But for some of us, we can't. And it's so hard that it's painful. It's so hard to go there that it's a lot of suffering for some people to go there. It's not wrong that we can't do that. It's just hard, and we have to understand that for ourselves and for others. And we also have to understand that when we do touch into that place, we don't have to really sink into it. If all we can do is touch that place that's hard for us, whatever it is, and we have to borrow somebody else's faith. Like some people say, sometimes, Kamal, I just hear your voice. They say, you can do it. You can borrow my faith or borrow whoever, you know, maybe your mom or your grandmother, or maybe it's your son or your granddaughter. And, you know, I told the story last night of my daughter, Tracy. We were going on a roller coaster ride. And she was little, about 6 probably, and her elder brother and sister were, you know, when you go down, they kind of let go, and they just kind of go into the feeling of like, phew. And little Tracy, she was sitting beside me, and she started to let go. She started to let herself go into that feeling of, phew, that really scary feeling of just going down. And so she was holding on tightly, and then she was looking up at me and saying, "Okay, Mom, you can do it too." You know, so I remember those eyes sometimes. "You can do it too." And so I remember her hands. She was like, I was white-knuckling those bars, you know. And so she was just letting go, letting go, letting go. And then she put her hands up, because people would do that, you know, going down, people in front of us. And the kids in the back were saying, "Mom, put your hands up. Mom, put your hands up." And so Tracy put her hands up, and I put my hands up. And it was an exhilarating feeling that you can actually touch those scary places inside of ourselves and be okay. It was actually the thrill that comes from being able to touch what's untouchable is really wonderful. So see if we can do that during this time.